Today in part 4 of our series, Stories to Live By, we examine the parables of the treasure and pearl. How does the parable of the buried treasure point us to joy? And how does the parable of the pearl of great price enable us to understand joy, eternity, and meaning compared to mere happiness? How do we develop a hunger for joy and escape emptiness? Here's Pastor Seth.
I want you to imagine that your neighbor, an elderly man, and he's going to go back on vacation, and he says, can you dog sit at our house? And you say, yeah, I'd be glad to. And you go over there the first day you get off work, and he's gone. You go into the back gate, open the gate, and the dog comes running out and pooping and peeing, and you fill up the dog dish with water and the food dish with the food, and the dog, like our dogs, love to fetch. So you pick up a ball, and you're throwing the ball around the yard. The dog's just having a great time. At one point, you pick up the ball, and you throw it in the very back corner of the yard, and it gets stuck about this high off the ground in a bush. A bunch of bushes back there, you know, hadn't been cut in a long time. It's kind of scraggly back there. See, you go back, and you're looking for the ball in the bush, and you stub your toe on something. And you look down, and you something hard, the tree root, no. And you kick at it again, and you see something shiny. This time you get down, you bend down, you put back some dirt, and there's a box down there, metal box. Hey, man, this thing's been in here a long time. You dig up the box, and it's a rusty old box. You try to open it up, and it's kind of that. You look inside, man, this thing hadn't been opened probably 100, 125, 150 years. And you look inside this box, and it's a fortune. Good night. Man, your heart just beating like crazy. I bet the old man doesn't know what's on his property. Oh, my gosh. You close the box. Put it back, cover it up, throw the ball around to the dog a little bit, leave. Well, the guy comes back from vacation. He tells you, Sonny, he said, well, I was back there. I decided I wanted to retire. He said, I got a lot of old friends back there. And you say, what are you going to do with your house? Oh, I'll sell it. I'd be interested in buying it. You would? Yeah. In fact, I really like it. And if you can come up with a fair purchase price, I'll purchase it. We don't have to get any realtors involved, 6% commission, all that stuff. We'll just do it, just you and me. I said, well, that's pretty good. So he came up with a good price, what he thought was a fair price, and you agreed to it. Now, there's just one problem. You said that you would come up with a down payment and that you would pay all the closing costs, but you don't have anything in the bank. Nothing. That's not really a problem. So you go to work. You talk to your landlord and say, I've been renting this place for $2,000 a month, and I really can't afford it anymore. Can I get out of the lease? Landlord says, yeah. You talk to a buddy at work. I said, can I sleep on your couch for a while? Man, what's wrong? Are you down in your luck? No, it's just kind of a long story. I said, yeah, you can sleep on my couch. It's $2,000 a month you just saved. Where else am I going to get some money? Well, you got a little bit in a retirement account. So you go to the bank. You say, I need to cash out my entire retirement account. The guy looks at you like you are a moron. You know how much penalty interest this is going to be? I know. I just got to do it. Okay. Write you a check for that. And you go back out to your car and you realize, I'm going to have to sell my car. The car's worth a lot of money. But, hey, you'll gladly sell a car. You go home and you think, man, I still got a long way to go to get the money for all this, the down payment and the closing costs. So you go on Craigslist. You put on your living room couch. Living room chairs, including that easy boy. The little coffee table. You put on your dining room table that was your mother's, and the chairs, and the nice china hutch that goes with it, and all your mother's china. Craigslist. Your bedroom, your king-size bed, gone. Nightstands, gone. Dresser, gone. Then you decide that you need to have still not enough money because you have a garage sale. Almost all your clothes are out there. All your sporting goods equipment. You decide to sell your triathlete bike. but you'll gladly do it. At the end of the process, you come up with just enough money for the down payment and the closing costs. You're sitting in that escrow office. You're signing those papers. Everybody you know thinks you have completely lost your marbles or that you're ready to commit suicide. Except you. Your joy is at fever pitch through this whole process. Now, Jesus tells a parable that's remarkably similar to that. Matthew 13:44. The kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again, and then in his joy went and sold all he had and bought that field. Now, imagine that there's a guy traveling from town to town, and he's walking through a field on his way to the town, and the crops are maybe like 3 feet high or so, and he stubs his toe on something. Reaches down, kind of irritated, looks at it, something peeking through the ground. Digs around, and he finds something like this that's been buried there. Opens it up. Creak! It is a small fortune in there. He looks around to see if anybody looked. Nobody's around. Creak! Back in, covers it up. Wonder who owns this field. He goes on his way to the town. He finds out who owned the field. And he begins to do the same thing you would have done had you been dog-sitting your neighbor's house. He gets rid of everything. He sells everything he has so that he can buy that field. And what Jesus says here in this parable, I want you to notice, is he does it in his joy. He's losing everything. Everything is gone, but in his joy, he's doing this. And then a parable right behind it. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant looking for fine pearls. Guy's been looking all his life for pearls. Buys, sells, trades in pearls. When he found one of great value, he went away and sold everything he had and bought it. Now, the same idea is that he found something of far greater value, and he said goodbye to everything he had once valued, but he said goodbye with joy, not remorse. Value and joy. Now, there's one little difference between these two parables that is kind of a fun, intriguing thought. I don't know if it's worth anything. But the first guy, the treasure guy, came across the treasure completely by accident. Never saw it coming. Never saw the value, never saw the joy. It reminds me of C.S. Lewis's book, Surprised by Joy. He never in a million years imagined that joy was rooted in God and your relationship with him. It was one of the mind-blowing things about becoming a Christian for C.S. Lewis. Surprised by joy. Whereas the merchant in pearls wasn't surprised. He had been looking for this for decades. He had been searching for something that was greater than what he had. And when I thought about that, I thought, you know, I think I've been on both sides of that. I think when I became a Christian in college, I was somewhat like the merchant of pearls, where I was searching for something of greater value than I had and something that would provide more joy than I was experiencing. And at the same time, I was the treasure guy who just stumbled upon it, because the last place I thought it would ever be was in something related to Jesus Christ. Last place. I looked everywhere else except that. And when I discovered that, I was just as surprised as the guy walking through the field. Now, these are the two things that strike me about these parables, is the incredible value that God offers to us and a kind of joy that he offers to us. And that's what I want to ask. What kind of value is he talking about? How does that relate to you and me? And what kind of joy is he talking about? How does that relate to us? Well, the first has to do with value is treasure. What is he talking about? Treasure. What kind of treasure is he talking about? Well, there are some verses in the Bible that describe something of treasure. Isaiah 33:6. He, meaning God, will be the sure foundation for your times. A rich store of salvation and wisdom and knowledge. The fear of the Lord is the key to this treasure. Now, when I think about this, the treasure in one sense is He. But inside that treasure box, if you do, He says you'll find some specific things in there. The sure foundation for your times. Anybody know what it's like to go through a personal earthquake? When your world gets shaken, you don't know what you're going to do, and your back's against the wall. There have been some times in our home life, when Mindy and I were financially, especially when we were younger, we were thinking, man, I don't know how we're going to pay this. I don't know where the money's going to come from in this. Lord, we are over our head. Or sometimes it happens with a marriage, or sometimes with a kid, or sometimes with your health. What would it be like to have a sure foundation when times are tumultuous? And then he said, not just a rich store of salvation, but a rich store of wisdom and knowledge. When I think about the Bible, I've been a student of the Bible now for almost 43 years. And I think about what an amazing treasure chest of wisdom and knowledge this is. And how our lives have been so shaped over the last 43 years by the principles that we discover in this book, in almost in all of the important aspects of life. A rich store of wisdom and knowledge. And then he says, the fear of the Lord is the key to this treasure. And the idea is something like this. Just because God offers a treasure to us doesn't mean that you just come up here and just open it up just however you want to. This little boy has a lock on it. And if you want to get inside there, you're going to need a key. And the key there is the fear of the Lord. Meaning, if I'm thinking, wow, I got a great treasure here. Isn't that great? That's exciting. But while I'm looking in that treasure, I'm just going to live life my way, the way I think and the way I feel. And I don't care what God's word says. In my particular case, and you know what's going to happen? This disappears. Now what you have is a nice thing to put on a shelf at home. A decoration. The fear of the Lord. What does God want me to do? Doesn't matter how I feel or what I'd rather do or what people are telling me to do. If I'm willing to bow my knee to God and to obey what He says, even when I don't like it sometimes, then what's going to happen with that box is, creak, and I'm going to find some treasure in there. Jesus said the good man out of the good treasure of his heart produces good. The bad man out of his bad treasure produces evil treasure. For out of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaks. There, when I think about treasure, I think about Jesus Christ living inside of me, changing my nature, changing who I am as a person. From over the last 43 years, from somebody who is self first, everybody else next, to somebody who's becoming slowly others first, me next. That's a long process. And I've not really been all that happy a student in that particular school. But one of the neat things about it is I can see the treasure inside of me and the treasure that it produces. 2 Corinthians 4:7, another great verse that talks about treasure. Paul says, what kind of treasure are we talking about here? Again, 2 Corinthians 4:7. He says, we have this treasure in earthen vessels. Now, what's he talking about here? Well, you and I are the earthen vessels. We're people. Whatever the treasure is, it's inside of us. And the treasure is Jesus Christ alive in us. Alive in us. That's good. It's good treasure. Okay. But treasure for what purpose? So I can feel close to God. So my problems will get solved. Is that what he's talking about? We have this treasure in earthen vessels to show that the transcendent power belongs to God and not to us. Meaning that when I'm going through hard times and you're going through hard times, that people are going to say, how in the world does that guy do that? Or how does she do that? what's going to become apparent is it's not him. I know him pretty well. Or it's not him. Or I know her pretty well. That's not her. There's something else going on inside of that person that makes them continue to persevere. And then Paul gives four examples of catastrophes, the kind of things that generalities that we go through. We are afflicted in every way. There's a lot you can put under affliction. We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed. There's the purpose of the treasure. When you're going through hard times, instead of bowing under that, instead of being crushed by it, there's something that holds you up, endures through that. We are afflicted in every way, crushed, perplexed, but not driven to despair. Times in my life where I'm thinking, you know, somebody asked me a question about something that happens to somebody, I said, I don't know. Can't explain that. Certain mystery about life. I don't know why this happened. I can't explain that. I don't know. Sometimes perplexed. Paul says, but not driven to despair. That's the treasure. The treasure's for that. Afflicted, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not driven to despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. That's pretty obvious. And struck down, but not destroyed. Either I fall flat on my face to my own failure, or I fail through the help of somebody else, or whatever circumstances, but not destroyed. Always carrying in the body of death, the body, the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be manifested in our bodies. Now, you see what the treasure relates to here? The treasure isn't so much something that I enjoy in my living room at 5:30 in the morning, or as you and your wife are praying before you go to bed at night. Those are nice times. But this treasure is something different. This treasure takes you in the hardest times, through the hardest times of life. Or in Luke, this treasure is what changes who you are from the self-centered person that I most normally, naturally am to somebody very different like Jesus. That's the treasure. Now, second thing here is, what about joy? What kind of joy is he describing that the guy who finds the treasure finds? What kind of joy? And then the joy implied with the pearl salesman. Now, when I think about joy in our Christian world with writers and pastor folks like me, and even as we sort of bat around that word joy, that is a word that has lots of different nuances of meaning. But we just sort of use the same word as this big umbrella term that implies some things that are true about this kind of joy and some things that are not true about this kind of joy. You follow me on this? Jesus makes a point to say both these guys had a tremendous amount of joy, but it's a particular kind of joy. So when I think about this, well, what kind of joy would this not be? It's not the joy of sitting around and thinking I'm feeling close to God. Now, I like that. That's a good joy, but that's not what is described in these two parables. It's not the kind of joy that, I've had this problem looming over me for so long, and finally God solved it. Well, that's a good joy. I'm all for that, but that's not the kind of joy in these two parables. Is it the kind of joy that somehow if I get closer to God, I'm going to have that feeling of immediate satisfaction more often? Well, that's a good thing, but that's not the kind of joy he's talking about in this parable, these two parables. What kind of joy is he talking about in these two parables that comes with the treasure? Romans 15:13 says, may the God of hope, he could have said, may the God of love, may the God of justice, may the God of righteousness, may the God of mercy, may the God of grace, may the God of compassion. A lot of words he could have used there. He said, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing. May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing. May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing, so that by the power of the Holy Spirit you may abound in joy. Oh, there must be a mistake. Because that says you may abound in hope. I must have messed that up when I sent that in. Or maybe it does say that. You'd expect him to say so that you would abound in joy, but he doesn't. He said that you may abound in hope. In hope. Now, what kind of joy is he talking about here? There are four different kinds of joy that I think of that he's describing here and related to our two parables. The first is anticipated joy versus immediate happiness. The joy of anticipation that something better is coming. Now, when I was 14 years old, I was in ninth grade, and we used to have these parties at the different houses. And I remember one night being at probably a Friday night at this guy's friend's house. There were about 25 of us in this finished basement, and 10 o'clock came, and parents were coming to pick up all the kids. And my dad was a little bit late, and I walked outside. 10 o'clock night, dark, and he's out on the curb with the car. And we had this little Ford Falcon convertible. Loved that car. And as I'm walking across the lawn, he gets up out of the car. He's standing next to the car on the driver's side. He looks across the car at me and he says, "Hey, Seth." I said, "Yeah." He said, "You want to drive home?" Yeah! I couldn't believe it. And then he took the keys and he went, whoosh, threw them up in the air, up over the car. Boom. Car keys. I'm holding car keys. I ran around the other side, got in, did something I had dreamed about for several years. I rolled down the left window and stuck my elbow out the window. Tried to remember how you start a car. Put the key in. Turned it. Turned over. He said, "Put your foot on the brake." Got it. Put it in drive. Got it. Lightly let off the brake. Got it. Find the accelerator. Got it. Now, it was only about a 5-minute drive home. It was in our neighborhood. But I can still remember this. This is almost 50 years later. Driving through the neighborhood in the dark. On the way home, there's a road that went down. I didn't know it. I was coasting. I thought my foot was on the gas. Didn't know it. Until we started up the other side, and we were slowing down. Oh, push on the accelerator. And off. And finally found that place for the accelerator. Up the long hill. Time to turn right. Blinker. Turn right. Elbow back out the window. Hoping my friends are going to see me. Pull up into the driveway. Put it in park. Turn the key. There you go, Pop. I could hardly go to sleep that night. I had dreamt about this for years. It never dawned on me, surprised by joy, that I would get to do this at only 14. Now, from then on, until I was 16, anytime my dad was home and I heard he was going somewhere, "Hey, Dad, can I go with you?" "I'm just going to go get gas." "That's okay. Love the gas station." In hopes that he might say, "Hey, want to drive home? Where are you going, Dad?" "I just got to go to the grocery store, pick up a few things." "Hey, can I go with you?" He got sick and tired of me asking if I could go with him for all these things because he knew. Now, from that point on, every day, I was one day closer to my license. Remember turning 15, getting up to that 15 and a half, get my permit. Now, I could drive Mom or Dad, either one in the car. Still waiting for the big 16. Finally got my license. Now, by the time I got my license, I was really happy about driving. But my joy did not start the day I was at the DMV in Texas getting my license. My joy started that night at Terry Smith's house after a party. When my dad surprised me with joy. "Here you go, son. Take us home." That's the kind of joy that Jesus is describing in this parable. The second kind is an eternal joy versus elusive happiness. These guys aren't going, oh no, I've got to sell my car. Oh no, I've got to sell my desk. Oh no, I've got to sell my triathlete bike. Oh no, I've got to walk to work. In their joy, they're getting rid of all this stuff. Why? Because of the greater value, treasure. Third is meaning versus relief. Joy that our culture tries to find, I think, is mostly related to numbing an ache or trying to relieve something inside that just provides me an ounce of relief from the pressure of this world. That's not what the kind of joy that's described here in these two parables. And then a joy that creates a greater hunger versus a greater emptiness. These guys weren't going, oh man, I hate to sell this, I hate to sell that, and my mom's china, and my lawnmower, and my car. Because there's something more, a greater hunger for something they could see was coming. That's the kind of joy he's describing in this parable. James 1:12, blessed is the man who endures trial. For when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life. The crown of life. Someday. For the rest of eternity. You think I'm going to trade anything in this world for that? You're crazy. It's coming. Which God has promised to those who love him. But notice that the joy comes through trial. 2 Corinthians 4:16 to 18. Paul says, therefore we do not lose heart, though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes, not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, what is unseen is eternal. Again, the theme is trials and a coming joy, the anticipation of joy. The Bible calls that hope. When Paul prayed for the Colossians, so from the day we heard of it, we have not ceased to pray for you. He prays four things for them. Asking that you may be filled with the knowledge of his will and all spiritual wisdom and understanding to lead a life worthy of the Lord, fully pleasing to him, bearing fruit in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. That's treasure we're seeking. May you be strengthened with all power according to his glorious might. Why? So I can sit back and feel like I've arrived spiritually. Isn't life just dandy? Let's bump ahead a few verses there. May you be strengthened with all power according to his glorious might for all endurance and patience with joy. Same theme. Giving thanks to the Father who's qualified us to share in the inheritance of the saints in light. Verse 12, he has delivered us from the dominion of darkness, transferred us to the kingdom of his beloved Son, in whom we have redemption, the forgiveness of sins. Now, this week as I was reading this and studying this, actually for a few weeks, trying to think, how do these parables intersect with me? And there were some different phrases that kept coming back to my mind. Immediate satisfaction. It seems like that's always sort of trying to get my attention. To grab something of lesser value, which makes the greater value seem not that important. Immediate satisfaction. I just need to have more of a passion. Well, sometimes God gives us a passion and sometimes he doesn't. There's reasons for that, I think. Sometimes I just seem kind of bored. Well, of course. Until we get to heaven, that there are going to be times when it's going to feel like that. Life feels like that because of the things that are all around us seem so inconsequential. And maybe sometimes I seem inconsequential. Or maybe sometimes when I can see no progress ahead, and there's no discernible reason that makes any sense to me why progress can't be made. I want to grab for the immediate satisfaction instead. That's like the guy with the pearl saying, I did like that pearl, but I'm not willing to let go of my car. I'm not willing to let go of my living room furniture. You think I'm going to give up my triathlete bike? No, I don't think so. Now, on the back side of your handout, you get the choice. We all get a choice. What is your real treasure? Immediate satisfaction? Want to feel good? Sometimes the immediate satisfaction that we have is the need to be right, the need to be correct, the need to be the person in the know, the need to be the funny person. Sometimes that's our real treasure. And other people pay a price for that. Sometimes it's our spouses and sometimes people at work. A choice. Well, Jesus was teaching and a guy came to him and said, Master, tell my brother to divide the inheritance between him and me. He won't do it. Jesus said to him and to the audience there, he said, who made me the arbiter of this decision? Jesus saw something very different. This man was chasing something of far lesser value. And he said to the group, beware of coveting. Going after some treasure that you think is what I really want, what I really need. At any price, I will have this, even if God says no. He says, don't do that. That is a big, big mistake. And he tells them a parable in response to this, the whole group. He says, there was a guy, he was a farmer, and he had a bumper crop. The guy says to himself, man, what am I going to do with this bumper crop? My barns aren't big enough. I know what I'll do. I'll tear them down and build big barns. And I'm going to put all that harvest in there, and then I'll be able to sit back and eat, drink, and be merry. And we pick up the parable here in your handout, Luke 12:20. But God said to this farmer, fool, fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. The very treasure this guy thought he had, he was counting on. You know, we had this big Powerball or whatever that thing was. What was it? Mega Millions thing, you know, a few months. And the whole nation just going nuts over this thing. When I read something like that, I think about, does anybody read the papers? Anybody read the stories of what happens to so many of these folks? Let me tell you about one of them. His name is Jack Whitaker. There he is. There's an article that says, the title of the article says, Lottery Winner's Wife Regrets Ticket. She said, if I had to do all over again, I would have taken that ticket and torn that thing to shreds. Now, why? Because after they won the $315 million jackpot, since then, he's been arrested 2 times for drunk driving. He was court-ordered to rehab. He agreed no contest to a misdemeanor assault. He's the subject of 2 lawsuits because of unruly behavior at a bar and a racetrack. There have been multiple thefts of both of his car, his home, and where he works. And there's a granddaughter that's missing. When I think about that, I think about these next verses in your handout. James says, your gold and silver have rusted. Now, this is a parable, so don't hold in. Well, gold and silver don't rust. It's a parable. The idea of rust is it's no good anymore. And their rust will be evidence against you and will eat your flesh like fire. It's a parable, allegory, imagery. Fire is the imagery of regret. What did I do? What did I spend my life for? What was I after? And then he says, you have laid up treasure for the last days. And here the imagery is something of final judgment. And the imagery that's being portrayed here in James is something like this. You thought, man, I had all this gold and silver. Look what I had. And the image is you walking up to final judgment. Can't wait to show everybody your gold and silver that you have. You say, everybody, look at this. Look what I'm bringing. And you open it up and suddenly discover something happened to your gold and silver. Maybe that wasn't a good idea. Boy, it seemed like a good idea at home. Of course, it was about 5:15 in the morning when I thought. What possessed him to do that? I don't know. That would be a topic for lunch. You don't want that to be you. Because that will be, like James says, like my flesh being eaten by fire. Jesus later on in this parable says to everybody after the parable is done, sell your possessions, give alms, provide yourselves with purses that do not grow old, with a treasure in the heavens that does not fail. A treasure in the heavens that does not fail. Where no thief approaches, no moth destroys. Paul says in 1 Timothy, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment, present enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, to be generous, willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. That's what you and I long for. We just use this generic term life, not talking about physical life. Life as it was meant to be. Someday what you do want to walk up to heaven with, it might be in an old bag like this. But you want to be able to pull out something like this. It's not going to creak. And from that moment forward, you will know a joy that we rarely have here. Let's pray together. Father, would you open our hearts, help us to hear what you're saying to us through these two simple little two-sentence parables. Help us to hear the value that you have, that you offer to us. And help us not to settle for a lesser joy as we continue to search for immediate satisfaction over and over and over again through our own hand, only to end up with a bowl full of lollipops at the end of our life. Help us to see the immense treasure of who Jesus Christ is and all that comes inside of him and all that you want to do in our lives this side of heaven and all that you have for us to enjoy on that side. In light of that, Lord, we will gladly sell anything that gets in the way. No question about it.